might as well, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 28th, 1990.
So me and Emily have a birthday tomorrow, right?
I have no idea what I'm going to say tonight. I do know this, that this is like deja vu all over again. We used to have our zone meetings here several years ago. And I can remember Todd over here remapping the Cobb County from two districts to three. And but there was a lot of memories here. And we used to start in the gym and, you know, divide into two or three groups from there. But, yeah, it's good to see tons and tons of sobriety in here, people that I've had various different relationships with, whether it's on the golf course or service, home groups, wherever, you know, going out to dinner, whatever. And to be in front of you here is really a privilege, really a privilege. As far as my, you know, I was talking to my sponsor this week, and I told him I was speaking tonight, and I says, no, I don't know where to start, you know. I says, I spoke a lot in the past. He says, how about from the beginning? You know, sponsors are like that, you know, just keep it simple. And so I will. I was, you can tell by my accent, I was born in the South. South side of Chicago. And it was a long time ago, but I there's a couple people here from Chicago I know, so I had a pretty good childhood, as I thought, you know. My family were all pharmacists. Imagine growing up in a pharmacy all your life. But grandfather, uncle, cousins, this, that, on the south side of Chicago, and I grew up with a pretty good work ethic, because they all did, you know. Grew up in a Catholic community, Mayor Daley's neighborhood, you know, and everything was pretty good. I remember when I went to school, I had really good grades. I never really had to study that much, and I felt the part, though, even at an early age. I could be in a room full of people and still feel alone. I remember that, you know, I went through the grades. They all knew me, you know. I worked all the time, you know. If I wasn't home, I was at my father's pharmacy working, and for the time I can remember. And so I didn't have a lot of play time till later. I had to sneak out and play baseball, all this stuff. And finally, I got into high school and I became a joiner. And I look back on that and I say, why did I want to be a joiner? You know, well, when I look back at that and I examine my inventory, I said, I just didn't want to be home. I never saw my father. He was always working. I was always told, you know, do this, do that, the chores, this and that. And my first escape was high school. I got out of the house. I joined everything I could, whether it was a wrestling team, the chorus, anything, just to, you know, stay out. And so it wasn't high school where I really had my first drink. I look back at that, and I know that in my family history, they're really, I think my two grandfathers, one on each side were alcoholics. Come on in. And my parents weren't that big of drinkers, but they had the behavior. I learned that here in AA. They had the behavior of, you know, being adult children of alcoholics. And as far as their being inside, we were like the fine family, so it's the old habit, you know, and everything was fine on the outside. My father worked a lot more than my mother wanted him to, so there was a lot of family squabbles. I thought that was normal. There was a lot of things I thought that was normal. Back to high school, I'll jump all over, but There's so much sobriety here, you understand. I had a chance to go to some pretty good colleges. I did pretty well in high school until my senior year. Actually, that's when I really discovered alcohol. I got drunk the first time. That wasn't a clue, you know, but I liked it. I didn't like the after effects, but I figured, hey, it's worth it, you know, going through all that. And you know, like a lot of alcoholics I've met, we have high pain thresholds. And so I went through all that. And I remember in high school going to Brother Rice High School on the South Side. They used to have these dances. And so a bunch of us used to go, and, you know, we were all light hitters at the time, you know. So we just went in, and we felt 10 feet tall, and we walked into a dance. So we had the guts to ask someone to dance. But this school used to have all these groups that started out in Chicago, like Styx and Paul Revere and the Raiders and the Association and all these. And we used to go there and see them for like 50 cents, you know. And then they got good later on. But that was my first experience with alcohol, and it worked. It worked really good every time, you know. And that was, so I was just a little weekend warrior, you know, in high school. And I went to college. I applied to a few different colleges. And I went to a college in Minnesota, St. Mary's University of Minnesota in Winona. And I wanted to be... I don't know what I wanted to be. I thought maybe I wanted to be a pharmacist, but I saw all the hours that my father was working, and I said, nah, I really don't want that. It was like 75% merchandising anyway, and I said, I really don't want that. So I thought I'd maybe want to be a veterinarian or something to do with biology someday. I wasn't sure. So what I did was I majored in that in college. I did well. I did well just to graduate, actually. But I joined a fraternity my first year, and that let out the floodgates. So anyway, I did that socially and over the line, under the line, whatever I did. But my life was surrounded by partying. Somehow I got through college, and of course by that time I got through, but I couldn't get into vet school. That's what I wanted to do next. So I went to pharmacy school, and after I graduated, meantime, we backtrack, I met my first hostage, I guess you call, in high school. That was my first wife. And so she saw me, you know, from high school through college. And I look back at that, you know, the perspective we have was when we look through this rearview mirror and we say, yeah, she actually witnessed, you know, my progression of this disease. I had no idea, you know, what I was getting myself into. I know that somewhere I crossed the line. I had a great time in my 20s. It hadn't really affected me as far as we hadn't had kids yet. We hadn't had, you know, I had a lot of responsibilities, except she worked, I worked, you know, things like that. And when I started joining all these things, again, I'm going back to being a joiner again. Here I'm joining bowling teams in Chicago and softball teams. I think I was on three or four softball teams. And of course, all the sponsors were taverns. So that was my life. You know, I worked hard, played hard. That was my philosophy. And so I got away with a lot. I got away with a lot, you know, living on the South Side and being kind of through a couple relatives connected to Democratic machine. There's things that I was able to get away with that most people wouldn't, like cops and the DUIs. And it wasn't even who you knew. It was what you had on who you knew. and that was my life. I thought what you could get away with, it was justified. You know, people couldn't get away with it. They were too stupid to get away with it. So that's the way I lived. And finally, I got out of, I was a teacher actually the first few years out of college, and I really liked it. Of course, the family started coming along. I couldn't afford to teach the way they were paying teachers back then. What I did was I got into the oil business, and I saw all the money I could make, and I was in at this oil company, and I started out as a dispatcher, and I worked my way up into a managerial, and they had some gas stations being opened up. So I opened up one station every 6 months, so I eventually had five gas stations, a string of them, on the south side. And so that was really where I went off the deep end as far as my drinking, my life management, neglecting my family, and justifying it, saying, "Oh, yeah, I worked just as hard as my father did, so I'm gonna, this is what I do." And as far as the alcohol concerned, I knew I had a problem drinking, but I'm an alcoholic. I can justify anything. I can rationalize anything. I can say, "Yeah, I'm working so hard. I deserve to drink." And the problem was I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't realize at the time that alcohol was just a symptom. I was saying to myself back then that, I had chances to stop drinking. Usually the courts maybe, quit. But when I did quit, it was sometimes for months I wouldn't drink. But I would get in the same amount of trouble that I did when I was drinking. So I said, "Well, it can't be the alcohol then. It's just got to be me. So I might as well drink." So everything worked out that way for a long time. Eventually, my wife got sick of me, and I sold the stations, and actually the state of Illinois asked that I leave. I was in a lot of tax trouble, my partners that were in, and so forth. There's a long story there. That's another deal. But what I did was I moved down to Florida, back in 82, right in that area, and I was offered a job down there. So I took it and ran. I was actually thinking I was running to something. I was running away from something. And when I got down there, my parents had just retired in Sarasota, and that's where I, Bradenton, Sarasota area. I jumped around all over. And what I did down there was, again, I went back to teaching. I had a landscaping business. I was doing all kinds of things, work hard, play hard, work hard, play hard, and drink. And as far as my life down there, I went through a lot of relationships. When I look back now, I've been married. This is my fifth marriage. Where I'm in now. It took me 50 years to make friends first. Everything was sex, drugs, rock and roll, and then, hey, I'll make friends later, And so it took me 50 years to I'm married to someone in the program now. Two of my wives died. One of them from an overdose or sleep, another one from drinking and driving, killed instantly. So I say to people, "Well, how many times you've been married?" I said, "Five times, but I've only been divorced three times." And I actually had one annulment too. So I'm getting down to two, I'm counting a little bit, But anyway. And I look back at that too, and I say, "Well, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't have a relationship with myself. How can I have a relationship with anyone else?" And it took me a lot of years of sobriety to learn that. But then again, when I got sober, I'll fast forward a little bit. I finally wore out all my relationships to the point where my wife knew me when I first got into treatment. She was really a drinking buddy for about 8 years. And what happened was that she was going to leave me unless I quit drinking. Well, I used to get maybe drunk 3-4 times a week. She only got drunk, you know, once a week. So she was, so I was the problem, not her. And so I went to a treatment program. My brother had gone to treatment about 6 months before this. And all of a sudden the pressure's on me. The family's going, hey, your brother's sober 6 months. You know, and I was selling cars at the time. I was used cars, new cars. I was going bouncing around. And this was down in Venice, Florida. And what I was doing there was the same thing I did up north. You know, I just brought myself with me. And I did well. I made a lot of money. But, of course, I was, you know, drinking it away and all the other enhancements, you know, that made me drink more. And but I went to my boss one time, and I says, I'm going to go to treatment. He says, for what? I says, I'm going to see if I'm an alcoholic. This was in a car dealership. He says, why don't you take about half of these guys with you, you know? I says, I'll be back. I'm going to take a 30-day leave. He says, I understand. He says, in fact, I used to have a problem with alcohol, too. He says, I've been going to church, and that's worked for me. I says, okay. So anyway, I went to treatment. First thing they said on me was, you know, that, you know, the three fingers looking back and this and that, because I was blaming everybody. I said, if you had my wife, you'd drink too. If you had my job, you'd drink too. It was one of those deals where I just rationalized. It was in treatment that I learned it was actually a disease. And that made more sense to me. They went through the chemical thing, the THIQ, all this stuff, and I said, but basically you just don't drink like a normal person. Let's keep it simple. What happens is that first drink will trigger more and more and more and more. You have a disease of more. Anything that's more is good. You know. And I learned a lot the 28 days. The last day they said, we're going to have a speaker meeting. I says, what's that? I said, well, some guy comes up and tells his experience, strength, and hope. And we're going to have it. And then you guys will, you know, so-called graduate. So I go in this room. It's kind of about the same size as this room. And the guy came into the door. He was late. He's our speaker's late. He walks through the door. It's the guy I used to share a used car desk with. I hadn't seen him in 3.5 years. And he spotted me back there, and he just grinned. You know, I thought he left state, died, who knows, you know. And for 3.5 years, I had seen this guy, and we used to run together a lot. And he come up to me, and he says, I didn't know you were in here. I says, yeah. I says, you know, I didn't want to tell anybody, you know. He said, well, we got a chair waiting for you. I says, he says, you got a sponsor yet? I said, no. He says, you do now. I says, wow. You know, and I look back, and that was a God thing, because he could call me on all my shit. He knew my history. He knew all my tricks. He knew all my, and to this day, I'll always be grateful. And some of you know Susie. In fact, he used to date Susie. That's how far back we go. But that was back in 1990. And, but anyway, we were really, he was real tough on me, because he knew all my stuff, and he had 3.5 years sobriety, and I thought, man, if this guy can do it, I can do it. So sponsorship was a big thing, a lot more than I ever realized, having a guide who could filter me through the BS that you hear in here, and stick with the winners. I didn't even know what the winners were. All I know is a lot of people sounded good, you know, but, you know, I had to really, really search, do some soul searching and be honest with him. And I had to be. And it was the first time in my life that I said, okay, I'm going to just lay it all on the table, you know. And I had the perfect person, thank God, to lay it on, you know. And from there, my second sponsor I got, because he had moved, he was doing a lot of speaking engagements around, and it was a woman, and she was, let's just put this, it was safe, And as far and she, so she told me that, you know, no relationships first year. Actually, he did. And so I, being a newcomer, not knowing any better, you know, I said, well, I can have a different one every weekend then. And that's how I rationalize, still these character defects, you know. And but I didn't drink. They told me, you know, even if your ass falls off, don't drink. Come to a meeting and we'll screw it back on for you. That's what they told me. And so I listened to them. I said, all the things that I tried never worked. I'll try what you got. And 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, if you still think you're not an alcoholic, we'll be glad to refund your misery. Basically, that's what they said. So I said, okay, I'll try it your way, you know. And that's what really helped, because I was talking to people like yourselves that have been through it. That really, you know, they have been through it. I couldn't rationalize. I couldn't, you know, they showed me a solution. They told me that, you know, here's the solution. This is what we did. There was no, you must do this, Walt. You must do this. You know, they said, this is what we did. Try it. You know, so I did that. And I got into one thing I talk about is the steps. Steps are probably the most important core of my program. I've made it a habit for all these years to at least include a step meeting once a week in my program. I have found that of all the meetings, they're the ones that usually stick to the topic the best and overall. And so that's helped me a lot. That's kept me, you know, connected. Let's put it that way. So I did that. I got into service. My second sponsor, she got me into service, and that's probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know, it's what you've heard. You know, where you can't give back everything the AA has given you. That's happened to me. I try to give back what AA has given to me. Going back to the steps. Like I say, they're the core of my program. If I look at them, you know, steps are really a good way to live. Even if you don't think you're an alcoholic. I mean, it's somebody had told me once that it's better to live your life as far as a higher power, you know, and find out at the end that there isn't, than to live, you know, your life without the steps to find out that there is. And I always remember that. But you know, this, I hear a lot of good stuff. All this lingo, you know, you hear all these, and they work. They're corny, but they work. Service has been my biggest thing. As far as the steps are concerned, I asked my first sponsor. I said, you know what? I want to keep everything simple. I want to do, you know, I got the, you know, the easy way. He said, the steps. How should I look at these things? He says, well, the first three, he says, you got to learn how to trust God. You know, you trust yourself, it didn't work all these years. Well, try someone else. And I said, what about the other steps? He says, well, you're looking at 4 through 9. Those are when you have to clean house, when you got to look at yourself, when you got to, you know, get honest with yourself, and not only that, but honest with another person and with God, whoever you choose to call God. And that was cool, because I didn't have to you know, memorize the catechism, you know, word for word, and, you know, it has to be this way. It gave me a little levity there. And then, of course, the maintenance steps, and those are the steps that I have to do the rest of my life. I was going over with someone today, and a lot of these steps, especially like we were talking about 8 and 9, they might take years to do. And then we, you know, I get back to the maintenance steps, and then you go 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis. And I asked my sponsor one time, I says, what's the most important step? looked at me and says, what do you mean? I said, well, which one should I, you know, think's the most important? He said, and I'm thinking the first one, number 12. I go, 12? Wow. I said, why is 12? I said, oh, it's first step. He says, no, first step you got to do perfectly. First step is perfect. 12 is most important because it's a culmination of the 11 that preceded it. I said, oh, okay. So what I have to do as a recovering alcoholic is to try to help somebody the way people so freely help me. That's number one. Went on a 12-step call. I had about, I don't know, way back then, I must have had a month or two of sobriety. I don't know what, but he called me up and says, hey, we're going on a 12-step call. I said, hey, I'm only on a second step. He says, no, just come with me. So me, him, and another guy, we went in the car. I guess he had gotten a call from some woman. Her husband went back out, and he needed a ride to a meeting. And he was drunk, she said, so be careful. So we walked, you know, and I was always told, you know, to go two or more to a 12-step call. So we knock on this guy's door, and his wife answers and says, oh, he's over back here. So we come back here, he's all hungover, and he says, yeah, I'll go to a meeting, yeah. So we get him in the car, and he's in the back seat with me, and the other two guys are in front. And we almost get to the meeting. We're about maybe a half a mile away, and we're at the stoplight, and a guy jumps out and runs away. and I says, that was a bad 12-step call, wasn't it? and he says, no. I said, what do you know? You know, he says, it kept you sober, didn't it? So that, you know, that right there, that told me that it's a selfish program, but what I have to do is I have to be good to myself first. Otherwise, I cannot ever be good to anyone else. And I always remember that. Think of the three legacies as well. You know, on the side of the triangle, we have recovery, unity, and we have service. And I was told that the recovery is the 12 steps. Okay, unity is the traditions. And service, which is most important, really in my sobriety for me, it keeps me sober. I get out of myself. I don't think of, you know, I don't get self-indulgent about things. I go to meetings. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. Service can be anything you give back. You don't have to be a GSR, DCM. I've been those, but some people have. There's a niche for everybody in here. We all are good at something, you know. And you don't have to be perfect at that. You know, as long as you have to reach out, because most of us are here because someone else reached out. Okay, we saw how that works. We saw how the reaching out backwards works, and the only way I can stay sober and keep myself, I talk about the second half of the first step, that is what I have to work on the rest of my life. It took me 1 second to put down that last drink. Okay, now the hard part starts. Now in order to not go back to that first drink again, I have to work on everything else. I have to keep, for me, it's an insulation. You know, I'm in the middle there somewhere, and if I feel, it's almost like a keel of a boat. I still have a couple sailboats, and I had it in Burnham Harbor. It's called Three Sheets to the Wind. So anyway, and we had a keel on there, and the keel I had was one of those that go up and down. And I felt this keel going one way or the other. It's kind of like my sobriety. It's kind of like my mental state. I have to keep this insulation around me, and I have to keep the even keel, as they say. And when I see myself going sliding one way or the other, I got tools. And today, I have a lot of tools. Because if I only had a few tools, I might forget which ones they are, which ones I might need. So what I do is I have a whole box full of them. And I may not remember them all. You know, I don't always go in there and look at every one and count and memorize them all. I might have to go usually with a phone call first, to a meeting. Meeting is a little bit better because I can see 20 people, not just one phone call. And that person may not answer the call either. You know what I'm saying? Happens. So you have to go down through the whole list of tools that I have, whether I have to pick up the phone, you know, pick up my car keys and go to a meeting. I have to, you know, do all the things that you tell me, all the readings that I do. And sometimes it's hit and miss. Sometimes it might not be the right thing. But to talk to another alcoholic is the essence. I don't care if it's golfing, out to dinner, whatever. I have to stay, well, my sponsor told me, he used to say, stay in the middle of the herd. If you stay in that middle of the herd, what's happened is you don't get eaten. The ones on the edge are the ones that get eaten. And so that's what I got to do. And that's what I try to do. Anyway, I'm going to be a little short tonight, but I appreciate everybody here, and thanks for keeping me sober.
Thank you.